Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today my guest is Patricia Corey, and we're going to be talking about her latest book, Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and the Dolphin Beings. What if whales and dolphins truly do have a superior intellect, as many believe, and we can actually they can actually speak to the human race? What would that message be? Back in November of 2008, Patricia Corey was actually in Jordan teaching a workshop when she had this amazing, life-changing event that occurred. A community of cetaceans, which is a choir of whales and dolphins, as she describes it, interrupted her talk with a frantic plea for help. Patricia was suddenly witness to a devastating scene of suffering, a communal grieving of scores of whales and dolphins, frenzied, lost, and dying. This was the first of several terrifying calls for help, all of which were immediately followed by mass suicide events as these majestic creatures collectively chose to leave us and our planet. It's very interesting when you hear about some of these events around the world, and then you actually speak to somebody who has been trying to raise awareness about what's going on with the ocean, and more importantly, with the beings that live in the ocean. So we're going to talk today to Patricia Corey about her book, but also about some of the things that people just don't quite understand when it comes to ocean life, as well as the beings that inhabit the ocean, and what, more importantly, we can learn from them. So I would like to welcome to the show Patricia Corey. Good evening, Patricia, and thank you so much for joining us. I know that it's the evening in Italy right now, correct?
It is, and thank you, June, for having me on.
It's been a pleasure reading your book, learning about your work, and more importantly, the messages that these beings have for us, especially when it comes to the ocean. People don't really think about it until somebody addresses it. And what's interesting is that, especially on social media, we have Water Wednesday, we have so many different things that we try to do to get people to start thinking about these things, because for the most part, unless you actually live near the ocean or you're involved in one way or the other, most people don't really give it much thought, unfortunately.
Well, most people live in their a little bit in isolation of their own reality, their own community, and their family. We spend how many hours a day indoors between work and the home? How many hours do most people really spend outside in touch with nature, whether it's the ocean, the mountains, or wherever? We really, in many ways, are very detached from nature. I speak, of course, of the entire population. And I think that this is changing. I think it needs to change rapidly, and I think it is changing.
It's very interesting when you think about the beings that live in the ocean and what life is like for them. I remember working with a marine scientist who was trying to raise awareness about the coral reef devastation that is going on and continues to go on because of the fashion and home decor industry, which is very disturbing. Basically, they're injecting cyanide into the coral reef in order to take the coral and use it for, as I mentioned, either fashion or home decor. And the thing is that the coral reef is basically the rainforest of the ocean, and it's being basically wiped out. What most people don't know is that it takes such a tremendous amount of time for that coral to get to that size, and it's not as though it's going to grow back overnight. When it comes to the ocean, we only have one ocean, and with all of the stuff that's being dumped into it, how do we expect all these beings to exist? And more importantly, what most people fail to understand is that our existence depend upon their existence.
Most definitely. Well, we who are, let's say, spiritually minded or activists for the planet will be able to speak comfortably about the oneness of all life on this planet. But a lot of people aren't there yet. They don't really have a profound understanding of the connectedness of each thing. When you talk about the coral reefs, it's not only the coral reef dying, but it's all the fish that hide or feed there. It's an entire ecosystem that requires, in the divinity of this beautiful planet and the perfect design of all things interactive, each is dependent on the other, as we well know. So you lose a coral reef because somebody has to have coral reef, coral earrings. You lose fish communities. You lose plankton. You lose eventually even the bigger sea mammals feeding on these beings. So it's a perpetuation of loss over something as frivolous as jewelry or, like you say, house decoration. It kind of makes me want to grind my teeth, but I'm sure that I'm responsible as well. We need to be very careful not to always point our fingers at other people and recognize our own misdoings. I'm sure I can dig up a piece of coral, an old coral something in this house, and this is something that I think is really important, that we take responsibility for our own shortcomings as far as protecting the planet and take a giant leap forward on what we need to do now, what we need to do moving ahead, because we've crossed a barrier where we can tolerate these, let's say, consciousness of ivory and coral for decor. I think you agree.
Yeah, I do. I think you're absolutely correct. There isn't one particular person or one group that is to blame. This is a series of events that have been ongoing for many, many years before my lifetime, before your lifetime. This has been going on for quite some time. But the point is that we are at a juncture where it's very clear that we need to do something, because we're at that point where the devastation is going to be permanent and we won't have that opportunity to do anything.
Yeah, well, also, if you're aware of the programs that the Navy has to begin bombing, blasting, attacking the oceans on five different locations around the United States and Canada, they are beginning these programs, five-year programs, for so-called testing the oceans for security. This will include every kind of toxic chemical, very powerful sonar. I'm screaming about this all the time. And this was going to, what they call, take around 11 million mammals, which is predominantly seals, great whales, and dolphin beings. So that alone is one of the most devastating pieces of news that anybody has a consciousness about the ocean, the planet for that matter, must hear and take action upon.
What's very interesting to me is that when you speak to people about marine life, most people don't even think about the fact that fish do feel pain. That was pointed out to me when I was working with this particular marine scientist about the coral devastation. He said to me, you know, June, fish feel pain. And I said to him, you know something? I don't know why that didn't dawn on me earlier. Of course they feel pain. They, like every other being, feels pain. We have the capacity to feel love. We have the capacity to feel hatred. We have the capacity to feel pain. Pain is what enables us to know that we are alive. So why shouldn't fish feel pain?
Well, that is kind of a, let's say, a little bit of human ignorance to think that another species doesn't have the capacity to love or feel pain. In fact, when I hear people say, I probably, if we start talking about vegetarianism, I'm sure the show is going to take a different turn than what you originally asked me to come on about. But when people argue for the case of eating meat, and I'm just like, do you not realize that you're bringing all that anguish and pain and suffering and adrenaline into your body? And the person who has no sensitivity to that is just will say something like, animals are here to be food for us. And I'm like, no, animals are here to be living community in parts of a perfect planet, and to be capable and privileged and allowed to live full, loving, joyous lives, just like us. So, of course, animals feel pain. They're showing us a lot how much they feel loved, too. We're seeing more and more images of videos of animals crossing species lines. I'm sure you've seen some of these images where you'll have a dog with five pups and a little kitten nursing from it. And many of these things are circulating the net, and it's as if to show us humans that in many ways animals are more sensitive than we are.
I'm glad that you pointed that. I'm glad that you brought that up, actually, because if you think about chickens, for example, people have, for the most part, no clue what chickens do, how they behave, and what their life is about. The one thing that I think is astonishing is that a human being will have an issue at raising another human being's child. And we see this every day when we look at foster care, we look at children that are orphaned, so on and so forth. But yet, a mother hen will raise another being's young as her own, which I find to be completely ironic. But yet, we seem to think hens are just these animals that are stupid, that are just there because they're supposed to provide us with food or eggs, what have you.
I'm hoping that in this time of great transition on this planet, more and more people are actively, rapidly becoming aware of the importance of acknowledging the consciousness, the love, the compassion of animals, and transferring their mindsets out of the animals as inferior beings, and recognizing how everything on the planet has a place on this planet, and that the animals are part of the circadian rhythm of the earth, which is an example. When the birds first come out to sing in spring, I truly believe that the roses, the flowers open because they vibrate, they receive that vibration, and they respond to the vibration of that call. And everything is in a divine pattern. By whatever anyone perceives the creator to be, there is most definitely a divine pattern and design to this planet, to life in general. So we humans, we've got a lot to deal with, and there's a lot of darkness and light on this planet. But I really have to believe that we are at a point where we cannot but wake up to the reality of the oneness, the interaction of all living beings. That is our mission. I really believe that is our mission.
When it comes to animals, why is it that they're more in tune with nature than we are? For example, when the tsunami hit, the animals fled. But yet we see pictures of people standing on the beach looking out as the waves are approaching, just almost dumbfounded. But yet the animals have had run to the hills, so to speak, hours beforehand. Why is it that we are still at a point where we're just so out of tune with nature?
Well, that's a very good question. I think for starters, we've been anesthetized by everything that society dishes out to us, which includes every kind of technology, television, internet, telephones, the whole distracting mess of it. I can imagine a couple of people sitting there with their cell phones texting each other from one side of the beach to the other while the tsunami was coming in. I mean, we are definitely the most distracted species on the planet, whereas the animals, especially the wild animals, are completely resonant with the vibratory frequencies of their environment. And we are too. We're wired to do that. We have the wiring to do that. So some people say that's a psychic skill. Others say it's a gut reaction. But we are animals. We have the capacity. It's just that we're tuned out, distracted on all the gadgets, all the problems, a lot of superficial ideas of what we want to do with our lives. you know, at a resort in Phuket, how many humans are lying on the sand and feeling the waves, and how many are thinking about where they're going to go to eat, what they're going to do tonight, how they're going to party, how they're going to get high. I mean, let's be realistic, right?
Mm.
So we're rather tuned out in a lot of ways. Just the fact that we wear shoes. When was the last time, I would say you, but I'll throw it out to the audience. When was the last time you felt comfortable to take off your shoes and walk around on the lawn with your bare feet? Most people today will say, are you kidding? There could be, yeah, da, 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 every kind of bug, disease, germs. We're programmed to be isolated from Mother Earth. This is pretty obvious. And the animals aren't.
I think, unfortunately, most people would also say that they don't want to walk on the lawn because of all the chemicals that are on the lawn.
This is also true. It's a new world. I mean, I remember as a, don't want to date myself, but surely as kids, we didn't have this preoccupation. Running barefoot on the lawn was just normal. I mean, who thought there might be chemtrail ooze on the grass or chemical? It's definitely a world that has poses such grave problems for human beings and for the animals. But we can't be stopped at that. We've got to find solutions. And sometimes it sounds like a glittering generality to make these statements, but I have to believe we can affect change and bring the planet back to balance.
It's quite interesting that with cetaceans, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is the world's biggest science conference, there was support at a meeting in Vancouver for a cetacean bill of rights listing cetaceans as, quote, non-human persons. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm thrilled by that. I think that it appears to me as an activist for the whales and dolphins and all animals, but particularly whales and dolphins, that they are determined to make contact, that they will be the precursors to establishing contact with human beings and not us. Well, we keep flashing them little cards with pictures and little numbers and waiting for them to clap their fins and in case of the dolphins and to respond. I truly believe that they are communicating with us on many, many levels. And anyone who has ever jumped into the ocean to swim with wild dolphins, which has been my great honor, most likely will report having felt, from the sounds of the dolphins, having felt a complete body alteration, because there is unquestionably something going on when they encounter a human being, or I'm sure other species too. They do a scan. When I jumped into the ocean with the dolphins, the wild dolphins, they started to do this, and I could feel this energy bouncing off of me, which is not necessarily a psychic thing. This is biofeedback. They're running their sounds bouncing off of my body, picking up information. And I just knew that they were examining to find out what was this big fish here. And at the same time, I truly believe I was given some sort of incredible energy balancing healing treatment or experience, because it was so blissful, as everyone who has had the joy of that experience reports. There's something going on here, and it's communication, it's interspecies communication, but the first, let's say, possibly the only species that is actually more evolved or compassionate than the human, well, let me take that back. Right now, it seems a lot of species are more compassionate than a lot of human beings.
Mm.
But I do believe that the whales and the dolphin beings have a higher consciousness of the world, the galaxy, and the vibrations of the universe than most humans do.
What's interesting is just listening to your description of or about the experience that you had with the wild dolphins, it kind of reminds me of how honeybees behave. I mean, they behave as a unit. It's just fascinating how in tune with nature they are. And what's interesting is that many years ago, honeybees were used basically to predict weather because they are in tune with the Earth's vibrations. And this isn't some type of hocus-pocus thing. This is factual. And when you study bees, it's very interesting about their ability to communicate with one another. And in the same token as with the dolphins, how they perceive other beings. And in essence, when you really begin to take a look at dolphins, whales, bees, all other beings, and you pay attention to their body language, to their patterns of behavior, just to their everyday existence, there is a lot to learn. Not to mention the fact that because they are so in tune with nature, which is something that we are starting to become more aware of and reconnect with nature. The more time we spend in nature, the more we are starting to become aware of these different things. And what's interesting is that in nature we have perfect balance. And that's why as human beings, when we spend time in your garden, in a park, where what have you, people become more calmer and more stable, whether it's emotionally or otherwise, they're more at peace, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Now, your experiences working with the dolphins and the whales, one of the things that I think is very interesting is how they bond together. You wrote in your book, and I just want to mention this because I think this is such a profound statement, united in life, united in death. Why is it that the dolphins and the whales, and as well as many other beings, they unite, but yet with humans, it takes a really powerful situation to get us to do anything collectively? Why is there such a gap?
That's a very good question.
And you're the perfect person to answer it.
All right, I'm going to answer that question, but before I do, there was something that I wanted to say about your prior comments about human beings, and I just wanted to honor the indigenous people, because when we talk about human beings and being detached, of course not meaning all beings, so I don't want anyone to be offended, but a reminder also that there are so many indigenous people who are still so sensitized, so in tune with the earth, because they haven't left the earth. And so they are our teachers, and it's very exciting to see that so many are coming out of the despair of some of their reserves and coming back into the light and the honor of being the guardians of the earth. So I had to say that so that we honor them. The next question was this very important question. I think that the community consciousness of some species, whales, dolphins, who live their lives together. They live in pods. They travel in pods. They mate in pods. They feed in pods. They are not structured as we are with our two-party marriages and children in these little smaller units that humanity seems to generate. Rather, whales and dolphins are, that it depends, I don't know how necessary there's a standard idea of how large a pod can be, but it can be anything from 7, 8 to hundreds of whales and dolphins traveling together. And I think that they, from what my experience is, they know oneness. They know that they are all connected and that they are all part of the song, the dance, the music of that oneness. And if there is a reason why, for example, all of the strandings, I believe they're committing suicide a lot of the time. They're just giving up for whatever reason. and that this is something that they decided a group level, a group suicide. Why is that? I'm not sure. I really would love it to stop, but I do believe that they communicate to each other that it maybe it's time for us to go, because there's no other explanation why we keep getting these 150, 200 strandings of whales and dolphins committing suicide, dying. And one of the reasons is because they cannot bear the sound, the sonar attack on the oceans. They just know no other way but to get out of the water, get out. And the only escape is death, unfortunately.
It's interesting that that is the choice that they make, and yet when we think about something as horrific as the attack on the World Trade Center, when you look at some of the images that were taken, I remember quite vividly an image of a couple that jumped out the window holding hands. And as traumatizing as that photo was, it also showed something. It showed that that couple chose to do things on their own terms and chose to celebrate the last moments of their lives in love, in peace, and in harmony than to face the demise that they knew that they would face with the explosion.
This is very interesting because I think this touches on a higher sense of what's happening, and that is that there are beings who understand their own immortality and others who don't.
Mm.
And if you do, then that gesture, that valiant gesture of leaping out together is, okay, let's just go to our next destination hand in hand. It gives one a lot more courage to know that it's a temporary temple we're in here, and that in the end, it's only a passing. And that gives me hope and courage about the Wilson Dolphins. I would like to believe that they know that they're simply swimming off to another vibration or another dimension. As a warrior for them, I have to believe that, because I can't lose my faith and my courage that there is a divine plan here, even though hundreds and hundreds of whales and dolphins are dying, stranding themselves month by month.
Pat, you recently founded a charity called SaveEarthsOceans.org. What prompted you to start the charity, and what is the mission of the charity?
What prompted me is that in the last few years, I can't really remember when this passion has become so overtaking, I have spent countless hours out in the ocean, going out to be with whales all over the planet, Mexico, Canada, both sides of the continent, Europe, and in the Azores. And it has, I don't want to say it's taken over my life, but the connection I feel is probably stronger than anything I've known in my life. It's just all encompassing, and I believe that there is a something very special for me personally in it, in that connection, and also I believe that I can help awaken others, at least some others, to the joy of what the cetacean community is for this planet, and the importance as well. To be near whales or dolphins is a life-altering experience for those that are not harpooning them or trying to kill them other ways. So as I see things deteriorating rapidly and the perpetual loss of more and more cetacean life, watching people like Paul Watson trying to fight single-handedly with his crew to fight back the Japanese slaughter of more whales, the massacre in Talgi, the bloodbath in the Faroe Islands, I just know that if we don't rise up as a community, it's got to be much bigger than segments of different organizations working on their own agenda. The mission of this organization was to do my best to raise public awareness, to start uniting more and more these different factions of organizations into one huge, powerful mass of human beings who want to stop this destruction of the ocean, stop the killing of the whales and dolphins, and help rekindle the balance, first of all. And second, and very important, I would like to do research into the real study of communication between whales and dolphins. And I don't mean handing them little cards to slap their fins with, but I believe that we can make great progress working with vibratory signals. I think we can decode the language of the whale and dolphin sound, unless they decode ours first.
Thank you. Now, let me ask you a question. When it comes to sound itself, I don't feel that many people really understand sound is not just there for our own pleasure, but sound, especially whether it's a bird song or otherwise, is used by nature for a reason. The birds use it for mating purposes, for declaring territory. The bees use it to communicate. So many different beings use sound to communicate. In your book, you talk about how they communicate with ultrasound and with intrasound. Can you just describe, if you could take a moment, your experiences with the sound and how that had an impact on you and how it changed you to make you more aware of the fact that, you know, we need to pay more attention to the things that they're teaching us?
Well, understanding how cetaceans use sound is very complex, and understanding their oral mechanisms of sound and the production of sound and the hearing cavities, the oral and aural, which sound the same, is rather complex. But I'd like to start by saying that we know that whales and dolphins communicate to each other. They communicate every, like you spoke earlier, mating, all of the understandable or predictable things about animal sounds are also relevant to cetaceans. However, what's very important is to also understand that this seems to be a greater purpose to all of the different sounds that they are making than those categories we just discussed. Now, scientists are very interested in understanding. They have yet to understand why humpback whales, for example, can do a 30-minute sequence of sounds before it repeats again. This doesn't really fit into anything like a mating call or a finite expression of sound between animals. Humpback whales can sing for 40 minutes, 30 minutes, and scientists are very curious what it is they're trying to communicate. So the important thing here is with regard to ultra and intrasounds, which is a term used in the book, is that this experience of sound appears not to be simply for communication or for navigation, but they seem to be doing something else with this sound, moving through their bodies. The book describes something called sound before sound, when a sound is emitted and the cetacean can experience the explosive nature of sound moving through the water and how that affects their body and how they process that experience through their bodies for whatever purpose they are using it for. And then there's a whole galactic explanation of that, which goes a little bit beyond the scientific side of things, which I'm happy to discuss if you'd like me to get into it.
Sure. Whatever you feel comfortable with.
Okay, well, I'm comfortable with everything. It's your audience that we have to think about. The book describes how the cetaceans are aware of the fact that they are not only three-dimensional beings. They're aware of their own multidimensional consciousness, their own being capable of moving about in other dimensions, something that appears the human race is starting to grasp. And one of the premises in the books is that the cetaceans already know this. And I believe that the way that they're working with sound is also because they're communicating on other dimensional levels. I hope that answers your question. I may have gotten distracted.
No. That's perfectly fine. No, I think the more information that you could provide to the audience, the better, especially since we really need to pay attention to what these beings have to say. And the people who have had the luxury of being able to work directly with them, you know, you're basically the messenger. You're the one who is working with them, who can bring back to us, the landlubbers, and explain to us what it is that we need to learn from them. If I may, I'd like to just take a moment. We have someone on the line that's been patiently holding.
Okay.
Hi, do you have a call? Do you have a question for Patricia?
Actually, I don't have a question. We lost the signal online to listen to the
okay.
show, so I called
sure.
in so I could hear the
Thank
show.
You. Always good to know. In any event, Patricia, in regards to...
We were talking about the galactic nature
yes.
of the Wilson Dolphins, so I would like to just say a few more
sure.
words about me.
Certainly.
When I speak about the higher consciousness of the whales and dolphins, I think that in some ways they are going to be really powerful teachers for the human race in the process of our transiting out of three-dimensional density and consciousness, and that although we're still stuck in this idea that we need to find out how their language works or find out how to get them to respond by showing them signals and cards with numbers, I really believe, and I hear from them, that it's not that they can't communicate, it's that we don't understand it, but that's going to change, and they're moving into a very important role in this process of human transition, planetary transition. So it's all the more important, and back to my reason for the foundation, that we make sure that they do not become extinct. And with Navy 15 million, they claim they're going to take out 12 million mammals. That is a staggering number. That will change the music of the oceans forever. So I just don't think we can let that happen.
It's kind of interesting when you think about other species, other forms of life, whether they're plants, animals, doesn't matter what they are, but when we look at the mass destruction of a particular species, people speak up. Why is it that more isn't being done about what's going on?
There's a lot of ignorance, and one of the reasons why so many whales and dolphins are being killed is because more and more people are eating the whale and dolphin meat. And yet in Japan, there's something like 5,000 tons of whale meat sitting in freezers. They continue to kill whales whenever they can get away with it. Then you find out that there's dog food for sale in Japan that has whale meat in it. So there's a lot to be done as far as educating people that, number one, dogs don't need to eat whale meat. But more importantly, the toxicity in these animals is so high that people are just setting themselves up for early death. Now, there's an organization called BlueVoice.org, Hardy Jones, who's a friend and colleague, who is taking that aspect of his activism, and that is trying his best to teach people, like in Iceland and Japan and now in Peru, that it's highly toxic to eat this meat, so we can try to get people to stop killing them because they're eating them. That's the starter. Then there is the blind killing because it's more important to play war games in the ocean than to honor the ocean. It's very complex. Many, many whales and dolphins are being killed by fracking, by the oil companies. So we have work to do on very many levels.
Patricia, what would you like to advise our audience as far as how they can get involved, how they can also connect with you and with your organization so that they can really help see the vision that SaveEarthsOceans.org has.
Thank you for that. I'm just getting my website up. We're having a little technical difficulty, as Scotty would say on Star Trek. So we're about to have the website up. I'm calling for people to get involved on many levels. I want to do campaigns to clean up the beaches, and I'm connecting with organizations that are doing that. There are going to be calling for people to get out, physically out, and clean up the beaches. We need donations, of course. Who doesn't? What organization doesn't need donations? We need a lot of people who are willing to put their name on a petition. People are still afraid to do that sometimes. We need the human voice to rise up against the injustice that is on this planet fearlessly and take a stand on what you believe in. And whether that's contributing $5 to an organization, any organization that you believe is doing good work, or whether that means rolling up your sleeves and cleaning up the tar on a beach, what it's really about is it's time to walk your talk. It's not enough to feel bad about the whales and dolphins, the oceans, the abusive animals. It's time to put yourself into action and say, I can only do this, but it's something. And like I said, whether it's giving up a coffee at Starbucks and helping fund people that are out there doing the work, or whether it's getting involved firsthand, we surely need volunteers. We need artists. We want to put materials into the schools. We're going to need so much help. So if anyone is interested in helping me get this off the ground and being in a key position in the growth of a foundation dedicated to the situation, then please get in touch with me. And my site, SaveEarthsOceans.org. You can come. It's still very rough, but it's easier to get in touch with me at patriciacorey.com, or my main site is SyrianRevelation.net. I'm also on Facebook and pretty easy to find on the social media.
And Patricia, I just want to give you an opportunity to also encourage our audience to read your other books, if you would just take a moment to just give your tell the audience about your other books.
Thank you. I have a number of books out. The easiest way to refer to them is the Syrian Revelations. These are books that are channeled and not. There are quite a number of different aspects: Atlantis, the workings of the galaxy, extra-dimensional and extraterrestrial life. It's quite a collection, and you can find, I think if you just Google Patricia Corey, you'll see what resonates with you and find out more, or look on Amazon.com.
Thank you so much. And Patricia, once again, it has been wonderful taking time out of your evening to have you come on the show today and share your heartwarming experience about working with the dolphins, the whales, all of the beings that live in the ocean, and as well as your other work with other beings. It's so great to talk to somebody who's actually, as you said, walked the talk.
Well, that would be you too. So let me take the time to thank you for all the great work you're doing, walking your talk.
Thank you, Pat. And I also want to just take a moment to say thank you to our mutual friend, Kat Eng, from North Atlantic Books, who was kind enough to connect both of us. And I just want to say thank you so much, Kat. But, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. And please, by all means, connect with Patricia Corey. Go to her website. And if there's one book that you should buy and read, and also share it with your family if you have kids, or even if you have kids that are in your family that you want to have a really good conversation with about as far as what is going on with the world, especially with the oceans. You'll find a lot of very heartwarming information in Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and the Dolphin Beings. I mean, there's so much to learn from these beings. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.